This one's good if it goes.
Oh, it did. Holy goodness.
Cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go.
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
I guess you got to hope for a dramatic 40.
Oh, boy.
Oh, they got it.
Jones. Oh,
yes.
Oh,
I can't believe it. Are you serious?
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
It's the world's greatest podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich. I'm Dan Dukich. Here's the deal. We're recording two podcasts this week. Today, we're going to recap the first weekend of tournament action. We're going to go through all the regions. And then tomorrow, we're going to record another episode looking ahead to the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. All right, Seth, where you want to go first?
D squared. Let's go to the West region just in general. We're not moving it ahead. We're going to look back. What's your biggest surprise in the West region?
Oh, Seth, here's the deal. I don't know that Iowa was ever any good. You know what I mean? Defensively, good enough. Very good team. Okay, that's a bad thing to say. I said that wrong. Very good team. I don't know if they were ever locked down good enough defensively. Had moments. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, Seth, when I watch Gonzaga, you know what I see? I see the most efficient team in the country. I see it didn't matter whether Iowa was good enough. It doesn't matter how good Oregon is. I don't think anybody's beaten Gonzaga. But I do think, Seth, I don't know how you feel about it, but when I watched Iowa against Oregon, I watched slow against fast. I watched athletic against plotting. I watched free and easy against stuck. I watched guys that, frankly, on that particular night were just better basketball players. That's what I saw.
I agree with you. When I watched Iowa all season long, look, we wanted to like Iowa. Let's face it. We wanted to like that he came back to school. We wanted to like because they're so good offensively. I had Joe Wieskamp on my team in Italy, and he was just a wonderful kid. So I was kind of invested in them. Franny, even when he goes to FranCom 4 or 5, down deep, we know he's a good guy that cares. Oregon is a team that makes you react to them. Oregon's a team with Will Richardson, who had injuries early in the season. People don't realize was 12-3 with him. Oregon's a team that's positionless offensively and defensively. Oregon's a team that makes you react to them. So, you know, I thought that was interesting. I do think the Creighton Gonzaga, we're not going to get into that until later in the week, but I thought Creighton was interesting coming off a really bad performance in the Big East tournament. I like this Creighton team. I like this Creighton team because I think they're a little tougher than people think. I think Zagorowski's healthy, which is important. I love the flow that they play with, which is interesting. Obviously, they got a break with Virginia going through what they went through. But still, their style of play early in the season, we said it all along. You know, they have floor gamers and shot makers all over the floor. Zagorowski's a terrific, terrific leader. I think Mahoney and I think Jefferson are hard, tough, grinded out guys. But I agree with you on Gonzaga right now. And I want to see Gonzaga with an athletic big that can defend Timmy, that's quick enough to move his feet, and that'll be interesting moving forward. But
Seth, can I talk 1 second about Creighton? You know, I want to give Creighton players a ton of credit. I mean, let's discuss this just for a quick second. You have the whole thing with Greg McDermott, right? Whatever you think should happen, that's great, good for you, but they lived it every day. Now they come out, and I mean, get housed by Georgetown. I mean, housed. Well, guess what, Seth? They're still here. And that's a testament to the players. That's a testament to the coaching staff. There's a lot of different ways teams are in the Sweet 16, right? There's a lot of different ways. Oral Roberts playing great. But Creighton's way, to me, speaks to every one of them speaks to their integrity. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say their path was so unique. And I applaud those guys, man. They could have folded up shop. They could have listened to the noise. But you know what they did? I think maybe I'm wrong. I feel like they gathered together, like, you know, got internal. And I'm all in on that. That's you can talk about college and who should be paid, who shouldn't be paid, but there are some real lessons in this world that you get from playing collegiate sports. And that's one of them that I saw at a Creighton.
No, I agree with you. I think you're right. They could have absolutely folded the 10. Obviously, what Greg McDermott said was egregious and unacceptable, but you could obviously see those kids still believe in him and understand that's not who he is. That's not what he represents, because they wouldn't be playing for him the way they're playing for him right now. And just the way it is, those parents wouldn't allow him to be playing for them if they really felt that was the essence of who he was. He made a mistake. He used a poor choice of words. There's no doubt about it. It's egregious and unacceptable. But you obviously know the inside, the heart of Greg McDermott. You know, those kids didn't believe those words reflected who he is. Now I'm going to go over one other team, USC. I don't think we give him enough respect. 14-15, really good defensively. Isaiah Mobley, he laces that thing up like he can just jump up and knock it down. He almost is an interesting NBA prospect as his brother is. But, you know, when I look at them, they are committed defensively. They protect the rim. They run you off the three. They're good enough offensively. Not great. They're good enough offensively at the guard position. Peterson is a skilled hybrid wing player that can solve a lot of problems. I'm not sure we gave USC all season long, including the Pac-12 all season long, enough credit. They're a good basketball team. They play hard. They defend. They're athletic. And my takeaway was from that bracket was they were underappreciated.
Seth, you understand because you did it, beating Kansas, all right? I don't, because we could never be. We beat Kansas like one time when Roy was there and we were in like the touch. So when you beat Kansas by 34 and that game is never going to come back, once that run hit in the first half, that game was never, ever coming back. If I were going to reseed the tournament right now, I'm not so sure, based on performance, okay? I'm not so sure that I don't have USC right underneath right underneath Gonzaga. I was at the Michigan game last night. Michigan, Mike Smith struggling. He's not as quick as I thought in person. I would put USC above Michigan right now. The problem is USC got to go through Gonzaga, and that ain't easy. That's the problem.
Let's get to the East, because I thought LSU, and I knew you were at the game. We were texting a little bit back and forth. LSU's got dudes. They just got dudes. I mean, they got guys that can make plays. Very few teams have guys that can make plays like the LSU guys. I mean, Javonte Smart, the plays he made, the matchup nightmare of Watford, Cam Thomas's ability to create separation. That was a good win for Michigan. I thought it was really a good move, and this is something people don't realize. You bring Sean D. Brown off the bench. Why? Because now you're really only changing your team in one position. You only change your team at the starting spot. So, you know, you can start whomever you want. Davis, you can start Johns. You can start whoever you want. But now you still have that same guy coming off the bench that brings energy, that can score, that puts pressure on the defense. That was a really, really underappreciated, underobserved move by Juwan Howard. Because you could, common sense would say, we're just going to put Sean D in the starting spot. And no, he didn't do that because he didn't want to change his team in two places. And I thought that was a really good move. I do think they got some issues ahead of them. I think Koprivica will be a problem for Dickinson, and there'll be matchups. But I don't know. Well, let's get past that. All right, so we're good there. The bottom of the bracket, UCLA, passing, catching, shot-making skill, really interesting to me. You know, they played against a really hard team to play against in Abilene Christian. Really hard team to play against. And all they did was play with good spacing, make the extra pass, and the ball ended up in the right guy's hands. That is coaching. They didn't end up the ball in the wrong guy's hands who could not make a play. So I was really impressed with them, and I was really impressed with Alabama. Just they imposed their identity on the game. What was your take?
Well, UCLA, I let me back up 1 second. I've never seen a team set so overmatched in every position like Abilene Christian was against Texas and win the game. Like, I've seen teams overmatched and get beat. UCLA, Jaime Jaquez has been unbelievable.
Woo.
Zhang has been unbelievable. And shout out, my wife coached Jaime Jaquez's aunt, Carmen Simpson, and they are wonderful people. And I'm so happy for all of those people because, frankly, that whole family is great folk, and Jaime's playing fantastic. Let me back up. Alabama to me is the most dangerous team, not named USC, in the tournament. I thought Maryland was playing pretty good. Yeah. I thought Maryland was going all right. I was watching the Michigan game. We had the Alabama game on television. I looked. All of a sudden, boom, 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 down seven. And as you well know, in the NCAA tournament, where everybody tightens up maybe just a little bit, Alabama doesn't look like to me that they're going to tighten up. I think Mick's done a great job with UCLA. I think a great job. And, you know, I was talking to Michael Lewis, assistant coach at UCLA. He played at Indiana. He's assistant coach at UCLA. And he's like, look, we talk about it all the time. We got to get back to the standard of what UCLA is. We got, and they talk about it, and they want to do that. And I think the way they played has been prideful, has been tough,
yep,
incredibly well coached, and you know what, Seth, a lot of skill on that team too.
Most skilled team I've ever seen Mick coach.
I agree with that.
Tiger Campbell's better than I thought, by the way. Tiger Campbell, he plays with good pace. He makes enough shots. He's got a middle game. He's impressive. John Juzang, and for all the people, I want to get this out there. All the people, oh, Cal, you're an idiot. How can you not play the guy? There's a big difference between your freshman year and sophomore year. Johnny Juzang went through his freshman year at Kentucky, enabled him to do his sophomore year at UCLA. And UCLA should be happy because John Calipari literally wrote the letter to make sure that that kid was going to be eligible immediately. But the lessons he learned of competing and working and being committed, all those things paid huge dividends for him at UCLA and for Mick. And I agree with you about Jaime Jaquez. He is a tough, tough dude. And Cody Riley just does what he's supposed to do. I mean, let's face it. They have dudes that play to their strengths.
Before we move on, two things I want to mention. First, check out America's Caddy on ESPN Plus, hosted by Michael Collins. Join the quick-witted longtime caddy, comedian, and ESPN golf analyst as he interviews the biggest stars in the game. America's Caddy is part travelogue, part golf history lesson, part celebrity hangout, and full of laughs, streaming now on ESPN Plus. And check out ESPN's newest podcast, Daily Wager. Daily Wager is a podcast for all your information on tonight's games and biggest plays. Listen to Daily Wager every weekday afternoon, wherever you get your podcast.
Last thing on this bracket, Florida State, the Fighting Hams.
Woo! National champs?
Great matchup with Michigan because Michigan doesn't turn you over. Changing defenses, people that kind of gimmick the game up a little bit. When you think about the games that Florida State's lost, they've lost teams that have changed defensive, multiple defenses, and they've turned it over a bunch. Michigan does not turn you over. So all of a sudden now, everyone talks about versatile, you know, positionless offensively. Florida State's positionless defensively. Their positions deep, and they can go across the board, defend you in that positionless defensively. That will be a big-time game. I'm all in on the Fighting Leonard Hamiltons.
Well, you and I have coached teams that have been both of these. One, we've coached teams that have a calmness and a maturity and a togetherness, and they've beaten teams that were better than them physically. We've also coached teams that weren't. When I watch Florida State, I watch a calm, knowing we're a really good team that obviously has, you know, enough guys. Okay, we didn't take that out. And I think this Michigan game, because I think Michigan's a lot like that. I wish Michigan had Livers. They do, and he's such a great kid. But Florida State, to me, is as good as anybody. This game is going to be one of the great games of the tournament. But, Seth, we can move into the Midwest Regional. And we can say the same thing. Like, let me ask you, I keep sending texts to Boeheim, and it goes, Buddy Boeheim, Julius Erving, Pete Maravich, in that order. Because, hey, Buddy Boeheim, I think his shot-making, think about if you agree with this, I think his shot-making has carried over to the other guys.
Oh, 100%.
Right? Everybody's 100%. Confident now. Everybody's going, Seth. Everybody.
And they find him too, but when they have to. But like, Buddy, I sent Jim a message and he just returned me one word. Unbelievable.
Yeah. But
like, Buddy Boeheim, first of all, he's a very good player. I mean, you watch him off the ball, as you always talk about off the ball. Watch him wait for a screen. Watch his footwork coming off screens. Yeah. Watch his ability to read the defense. Watch how he bumps one back or he curls one. Watch him use shot fake when he feels pressure and people close out where he's throwing it on. And when, like, when the dude shoots it, like, every time, whether it's Kyle Korver-ish or whomever you want to compare him to, every time he shoots it, you think it's going in. Defensively, they've gotten better. They're much more active. They're getting more deflections. The forwards are recovering back better. Now, you know, we'll talk about it later in the week, but Houston's an interesting team because they're such a good offensive rebounding team. But they're used to having being out-rebounded. But you look at – and Alan Griffin, he hasn't even had a good tournament. Right? But Quincy Guerrier, that dude is for real. But then you look throughout this bracket.
Can I mention one kid real quick?
Yeah.
Dolajai. Woo! Is so Woo! Good at everything.
Swiss Army knife.
Yes. I mean, I don't understand why he can't get exposed more in the zone. And then I realized he knows how to play in the middle of that zone better than you know how to play offense in the middle of that zone. He'll come up on you. He'll back off. He'll not. Seth, that dude, I love him. Let's move to the next.
Yeah, in the middle of the zone, people got to understand, depending on who catches it in the middle, that determines how Syracuse will play.
Right.
So, like Asabuin, the kid from West Virginia, they weren't playing him. All right. Now you put a playmaker, he might play him, but then you got to be big enough to be able to jump up and shoot over that guy. So that's great. The other thing about that bracket, just in general, Loyola Chicago, the Fighting Sister Jeans, clinical. Own the tempo offensively, defensively. They don't turn over, don't give them second shots. What they did offensively in terms of using Krautwig as a passer, your guy who represents Chicago. I was surprised that Brad didn't try to pressure him, but then I thought through it a little bit more, and I said, wait a second. If he tried to pressure the passer, Kofi Coburn was going to last about four plays because he was going to get him in foul trouble. He was going to go boop, 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 boop. The idea of taking the ball out of IU's hands, terrific. This is not a Cinderella story. This is just a really – really, really, really good team. Your thoughts?
I one of the takeaways from this time, two takeaways from the tournament so far. One is defense wins games. I was at that game. I was at the Illinois game. And I'm sitting there going to myself, wait a second. Okay, maybe you don't want to pressure, but at some point you got to do something with Krautwig at the top of the key. Yeah. You can't just let him stand there and pick you apart. You know, and it didn't work. To me, Loyola, the story was what Loyola did with Io DeSumo. Io DeSumo got so frustrated that Krautwig took it away from him towards the end of the game, just reached in and stole it. Right? They trapped. They jumped him. They switched everything. Seth, I'm telling you, the defensive setup and the defensive players, we can talk about coaching.
Guard, boy.
Oh, well, hey, look, that whole team, Seth, they stay in front of you, and I mean, I don't know if people can see this on video, but while their rear end is down and their feet are spread, their hands are into you. Man, they are making you back up as a dribbler. And Seth, when you talk about Cabello, DeSumo, Frazier, you're talking about three on one team now. You're talking about three of the best, quickest ball handlers couldn't get by him, Seth.
Yeah,
and I got to tell you, great scheme, but Williamson, those guys got down in a stance and defended, brother.
100, and you know what? Brandon Norris, that dude is a tough dude. He is a tough dude. All right, the last team in that bracket that, you know, look, Oregon State's won 9 of the last 10, by the way, so people need to understand. They came into the tournament fairly hot, won the conference tournament. Experienced backcourt, veteran guys, Jared Lucas, big-time shooter, obviously, Ethan Thompson. But if you look at what they've done and how they've done it, now, in their last, like, five or six games, they're shooting, like, 45 for three and holding people to 24% from the three-point line. They've got legit size on that team.
Yes.
And I love it because, let's face it, they went from, which I think is hilarious, Wayne Tinkle on a hot seat, to that dude should just hold up Oregon State. He should just hold them up. He should just say, I want this many years. I want this buyout. This is the way it's going to be. D squared. All right, the South. A little closer to being chalky, I would say. What is your take on Oral Roberts?
The great Tom Moore, legendary football assistant coach, who many people feel should be in the Football Hall of Fame, said very famously, late in games, players, not plays. And when I look at Oral Roberts, here's what I see, Seth. I see two guys that one time against Ohio State, Abmas and Obinar, scored 59 points combined against Ohio State. They backed it up with 55 points against Florida. I see players, not plays. I see a very well-coached team. I see a team of discipline, but I see a team that understands who its stars are. And those guys have gone out and made play after play after play after play. And frankly, I see a very dangerous team in Oral Roberts. Played a good team, really good team, in the Must Bus. Arkansas, terrific, terrific story, great rejuvenation. Justin Smith is fantastic, I think, as a leader, a fifth-year guy. But look, Oral Roberts, I don't know if they're going to win, but I know this, players not play shines through because they got two guys that are going and getting it done, Seth.
Yeah, I really like this team. I think that they're defensively, they're disruptive enough, and offensively they create matchup problems. It's basically those two guys can play with anyone, and they do a good job of getting them the ball in places where they could attack. Obanner, obviously, you can invert a little bit, pull them away, which is interesting. I do think that it's a good matchup for Arkansas. Could Oral Roberts win? Yes, but I like the matchup because I think Arkansas's perimeter defense is good enough. I think they have a good matchup with Smith on Obanner, which I think is a key. I'm not sure. Let's face it. I mean, in the game the other day, a little bit mismanaged at the end of the game for Florida. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, play the two big together when you're up 11 points. Go a little bit smaller. Add another ball handler. Be able to switch maybe. Having a non-free throw shooter on the court at that point where they actually gave the foul. No one even talked about how Oral Roberts actually gave a foul. All right, to get the possession back on a bad free throw shoot. That wasn't even mentioned. I mean, brilliant, great coaching move, stole a possession. Basically, you're stealing possession, getting the ball back. The Must Bus is interesting to me. Moody's dynamic, but J.D. Notte and Tate and Smith and Davis, they come at you with waves, and they have they do have a grit about them. And it comes from, like, look, the Must Bus, he's my guy, jumping on the scores that – Must acknowledge the other coach first, then jump on the scorer's table. I've got to straighten him out. I mean, it was a great video piece, but come on, Must, at least acknowledge the guy you just beat. A nod, an elbow bump, a fist bump. I mean, it doesn't have to be a full bro hug. We can't do that now in a COVID environment, but at least, like, look down at the guy and go, hey, heck of a game. But anyway, as I move on, as I digress.
One thing quickly, Jalen Tate. I'm a big fan. Jalen Tate was at Northern Kentucky. He gets about 10, 11 points a game, but he can do about everything you want. And you know what? I watch him. He's a winner. He's tough. And Justin Smith, look, Justin Smith, for whatever the reason, wanted out of Indiana. And you put Justin Smith on Indiana? There's no question. You're talking about an 8-rebound, 7-rebound guy, dunks, runs. I think Justin Smith as a fifth-year guy, and I think Tate as a transfer, I think those two guys are the perfect guys to put a team in the position that Arkansas is in. And I don't say this after the fact. I think we've been on the must-best. You certainly have all year long. But anyway, we talk about transfers, and sometimes a perfect spot, perfect guy. Those two guys, perfect spot, perfect guys up for the must-best.
And you know what? On the other side of that bracket now, you've got some transfers too. You got Baylor, obviously, with Flagler, Macy O'Teague. That I think, and I think everyone overreacted. Oh, Baylor, that's not the same. Oh, Baylor, they're not guarding. Oh, Baylor, this and all that. They came out of pause, right? They didn't play well against Iowa State. They won. They lost the game in the Big 12. Oh, by the way, the Big 12, you're going to lose a game. This isn't the West Coast Conference. You're going to lose a game. It takes time to settle in. Did I change on Baylor? No, I didn't change on Baylor. I'll tell you why. Because they can guard the basketball. They can flat guard the basketball. They one-on-one, they can dominate the ball. All right? They've got more shot makers. My man Matt Meyer, or as I call him, Matt Ellis, because my man LaFonso Ellis was on him from day one. So he's basically adopted him. He's Matty Ellis. The dude's going to play in the NBA. They got NBA four gamers and shot makers all over the floor. Oh, by the way, Navier Mitchell, he's an absolute stud. I don't think Nova matches up well against this team without Colin Gillespie. I just think it's not a good matchup for them. I think what Jay's been able to do is incredible. I think it's culture and attitude driven. I think they've found ways to kind of piece the thing together. But I see a long night for Villanova. What's your take?
Oh, that's hard to argue. I think that what Jay Wright's done is great. I was watching them the other day, and man, oh, man, pass up a good shot to get a great shot has never been more evident than in these last couple of games. That's just what they're doing, and they're doing what Jay Wright wants them to do. And, you know, and I also thought in the two games that they played, they had the three best players on the court. And they don't have the three best players on the court in this game. This game is a tough game. This game is a man's game. This game is something that if you give me Villanova and Colin Gillespie, I might take Villanova. But right now, I'm with you. I did have a little bit doubt of Baylor after in a little bit. I'm like, okay, maybe not. But now I'm like, they're going to the Final Four. I think they're very good. I think that Baylor – let me go back into something. I believed, regardless of Gillespie, they had the three best players. Villanova did. I believe that. Robinson Earl, the whole deal. They don't have it. And I said earlier, players, not plays. And this is going to be players for Baylor being better than the players at Villanova. Both cultures are great. I just think they got better players right now without Gillespie.
All right, we close it up. Here's my question, because this is a perfect segue, as they say in the business. Not that I know the business, but I heard someone say that it sounds very good. Like I know what I'm talking about. Taylor will probably say he's acting like an idiot again. That's all right, because I was also the idiot that the Big Ten is different and it's better scouted, better played, all that. But here's the thing. You said players, not plays. This is a NCAA tournament. Suggs, Moody maybe, Mobley. Very few guys that all of a sudden you go, ooh, I got to watch him. This is a Final Four now that's developing that is about, you know, Mitchell and Butler, but they're not megastars. This is a Final Four different than college football playoffs, which it's open to the Loyolas and Abilene Christians and Earl Roberts. This is a Final Four, how it's emerged, that's really about the front of the jersey because it has nothing to do with the Blue Bloods. It has nothing to do with the tradition. It has very little to do with that one-and-done guys. It has to do with teams. Is that good or bad for college basketball? Bad for CBS probably. But is that good or bad for college basketball in the tournament?
Absolutely great for college basketball. It's what college basketball is. We all made college basketball into one and done, green room guys, whatever, NBA, how do they project? We did that. But guys our age, we grew up on the front of the jersey. We didn't watch UCLA every day, but when we saw him, we knew who UCLA was, and we knew who Bill Walton was. He was wearing that jersey. I think it's the greatest thing ever for the front of the jersey. And I think when you talk about the front of the jersey, that's what most people in this country think about. Most people work for a company. Most people do things for others. Most people aren't pounding their chests every day about themselves. And I think this has been a great testament to the front of the jersey. I think it's great for college basketball moving forward. I don't want to get into all of the things that irritate me about what should be done or what shouldn't be done in college basketball. I just know this. I just know the front of the jersey mattered. The front of the jersey has always mattered. And the front of the jersey hasn't mattered nearly as much as it has this year in 10, 15 years.
All right, I'm going to finish with this, and it's going to be a little controversial, but I really don't care. I listened to Luca Garza and Jose Alvarado, their post-game press conferences after they were eliminated from the NCAA tournament. And they both said the exact same thing. Emotional, no doubt. Luca Garza said, Iowa changed my life, and thanked the university, his teammates, his coaches, the experience of college basketball. Jose Alvarado said, Georgia Tech changed my life. To me, it was refreshing. And look, I'm all for the NIL, so I don't even want to hear it. All right, but to me, it was refreshing because we finally got two guys to step up and say the whole idea of college athletics and playing on a team is that shared experience. The whole idea is to go to college is to build a bridge for your future. The whole idea is to be part of a team. The whole idea is that experience of competition and doing it and exhausting yourself and putting everything into it. And when I heard those two guys and what they said and how they said and the emotion that they said it with, you know what? It gave me hope. Sounds stupid, but it gave me hope that maybe we will understand. Yeah, there's all stuff going on. We got one and dones, we got NILs, and we're just, you know, the NCAA hashtag thing, all that stuff. But you know what? In the end, education means something. The experience means something. Doing it with someone else means something. The lessons you learn mean something. And I know they're not mutually exclusive, but to hear those guys say it and how they said it, like, it warmed my heart because it said this vision is still alive and there are people that are not entitled, all right, but appreciative. And I'm not saying that anything about anyone else, but those two kids just made me feel, it put a good feeling in my heart.
Hey, this is the world's greatest podcast. That's a great, great way to end this, Seth. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Check out more great podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.